She was seething with anger and humiliation. She looked wild and she looked beautiful. A tour bus parked at the curb was disgorging a fresh load of out-of-towners. It took me the length of the bus before I caught up to her again, and this time I grabbed her more firmly. "Monica, hold it. I want to find out if you're all right. I hate you. I hate you." The tourists, those still on the bus and those exiting down the steps, were all keenly attentive. Some brazenly were looking on, others furtively, but all of them were soaking it in. I challenged her. "Monica, tell me what happened back there."
"I don't need to find out who murdered my sister. I already know. You did."
She pointed an accusing finger at me, and then swung it and aimed it at several individual men in the group.
"And you, and you, and you, you all did."
The tourists were reaping a bounty of material to write home about, but the wives of the group, seeing that their husbands were being singled out, became scornful. In the gathering crowd, smartphones were suddenly popping up all around, like ocean polyps on a coral reef.
"Men, disgusting pigs! You turned my sister into a sex object, and then you killed her! I hate you! I hate every one of you! Get away from me!"
Beseechingly, I held out my hands, trying to calm her down. It clearly wasn't taking, as virtually at the top of her lungs, she screamed an obscenity, tore at her hair, and then bolted to the nearest subway entrance, where she flew down the steps. I couldn't just let her go. I caught up to her again as she moved out onto the subway platform. A train was about to enter the station, its rumble now a deafening roar. She was so full of loathing and hysteria that I worried she might pull an Anna Karenina. I didn't dare crowd her, but only stood close enough to where I thought I could grab for her if she tried anything that desperate. The train barreled into a screeching stop. She stepped aboard as soon as the nearest door opened. I remained where I was, hoping she would turn to look at me, but she determinedly refused. Seconds later, the long line of doors closed and the train serenely departed the station. I waited for the next one and rode it back up to campus. Emerging up to street level, I saw that the season's first snowfall was commencing. The red bricks and the gray cobblestones were speckled white, and the monuments to either side of College Gate, the twin statues, Scientitia and Letters, were starting to accumulate dandruff. Scientitia was represented as a 15-foot-tall, bare-chested, perfectly proportioned male athlete holding a stone globe the size of a basketball in the crook of his arm. The ball had the word science etched across it in bold letters. His corresponding twin of the same height was dressed more appropriately for the season in a flowing robe. She was depicted holding a large book, turned around and facing outward, as though she were teaching a class over Broadway. Neither one offered any insight to the harrowing Times Square incident I had just been through. On the ride back up the campus, I had determined to distance myself from the Beverly Martindale murder investigation altogether. I decided I was done volunteering my services. I hoped I had had my last encounter with the highly volatile harpy in training, Monica Martindale. It wasn't that I was angry with her for being angry at me. I understood her reaction, and, if anything, I admired her pluck and her grit, as well as the courage it took to show up at Ne Plus Ultra on her own. I would probably help her again if the conditions were right and she was calmer and more rational. But for the time being, I was going to heed Ziki's advice and stay out of it. I thought of it just like making a New Year's resolution, one that I was determined not to break. However, just like the majority of those that people do make, it was a resolution that didn't last out the winter, as barely did I.